Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:13 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is February 14th, so happy Valentine's Day to anyone celebrating. And when we look at oil prices, we certainly have a short-term overbought condition and we're creeping in to test the psychological $100 level. So it's a reasonable time to think about what's driving the price. In the short term, it's geopolitical. So people are worried about whether Russia is going to invade the Ukraine. And I remain of the view that it's unlikely. But until that fear has been completely dispelled, then I think there's still going to be a risk premium on this market. And that's helping to support prices. But then we have the additional factor that we have a clear backwardation. And because of the backwardation, there's a short-term supply deficit. So normally one would anticipate that commodity prices would curve from bottom left to top right. Now prices are very high in the short term. And there's a significant spread between the short end and the longer end of the curve, over $20 now. So there's certainly less supply around. And a good part of the reason for that is because the major suppliers really got shook by negative prices in 2020. So they've been very reluctant to increase supply. And then the major non-OPEC producers, they're looking at negative media commentary every time they talk about increasing supply because they're being accused of raping the planet. So obviously, that's helping to support prices. But we have a short-term overbought condition, and we are in the region of a potential area of resistance. So I think any easing of geopolitical tensions would result in at least some consolidation in the oil price. And of course, we've also had a pop on the upside in gold. So gold followed through on the upside in here today. It was up $14. Now, right in the region of the peak from back in November. Now, of course, everybody knows what happened every time gold has popped on the upside over the course of the last year. So not only does it have to break out, it has to sustain the move. And I think ideally, if it can find support and hold support in the region of $1,850, well then that's going to be a concrete confirmation of a return to medium-term demand dominance. Now we have a clear succession of higher reaction lows over the last year, so that generally suggests accumulation has been underway. And the amplitude of the range has been contracting. So people were very eager to try and short gold in June and August, less so in November, and again, even more less so than in January. So now prices have popped on the upside, and I think it's important to also just pay attention to what it looks like on a weekly chart, because it looks like a rounding characteristic, and it looks to be on the cusp of breaking the succession of medium-term lower rally highs. So it's certainly looking more bullish for gold than it has done in a while. And these periods of narrowing breadth and rising lows, this wedging characteristic generally gives way to powerful breakouts. So if gold can break up and out of this range, then I think it would be well in excess of $2,000 in a very short period of time. And then when we think about the Gold Bugs Index, well, it was also in positive territory today and starting to push up and through the 200-day moving average, having found support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But it's been looking like a first step above the base for the last year and a half, and we're coming off the lower side of it. I think this underperformance of gold shares relative to gold is very much indicative of the loss of faith that investors have in the capacity of gold miners to do better. And I think that's unjustified. in the current environment with the adoption of all-in sustaining costs, which are really a worst-case scenario from the perspective of a gold miner, and then they are still producing really quite impressive margins, then there is really a clear scope for gold miners to respond very favorably to a breakout in the gold price. And silver prices are also firming now from the lower side of the range, and again, it's another example of a first step above the base. Now, these first steps above the base, they can last for anything up to a year or two, and sometimes even longer than that. But the most important thing to remember is that when you get a really clear breakout from a well-defined base formation, the most important confirming point is that prices hold the breakout. That means that for however long it lasts, people are willing to pay more than they did for years previously. And that is the best evidence that we have that we're in a new demand-dominated environment. Then when we think about stock markets, well, the Nasdaq was in positive territory in early trading and then gave it all up and then was able to finish out the day in mildly positive territory. So it's trying to put in a higher reaction low. And we can also then think about companies like Amazon, which have been extremely volatile over the course of the last few weeks. And it also staged a short-term rally and held on to about half of the advance in here today. So we're seeing some attempts by some of the larger companies to put in support, and Microsoft beginning to steady in the region of the 200-day moving average. But the big challenge for the stock market in confirming support is the continued strength in bond yields. And the 10-year yield was up nearly 6 basis points in here today, and it reversed an earlier decline, and it was a choppy day for bonds. But it's not really all that surprising that we get some chop around a big psychological level like 2%. And it's been bobbing around this area for the last couple of days. And we do have a short-term overextension relative to the trend mean. But I think the bigger picture here is we've had a really impressive breakout from a well-defined range. And now the yield is back up inside the overhead trading range. And I certainly concede that these ranges are extraordinarily lengthy and that we're looking at more than 20 years of history on this chart. But the range between about 1.5 and 3% went on for a decade. So now we're pushing back up into that overhead range, and it's a failed downside break. So the most likely scenario is that the yield is going to go right up and test the 3% level. So if we get yields at 3%, then it's really likely that the stock market's not going to rally in that environment. And instead, we can see that, in the very short term, the S&P 500 is bobbing around in the region of the 200-day moving average. But if yields continue north from here, and central banks are aggressive in talking about raising rates and in fact follow through, well, then it's, I think, quite likely that the stock market will unwind at the overbought condition relative to the 1,000-day moving average and come back into the region of the peaks from back in early 2020. In other words, if central banks begin to talk about normalization, then the stock market will price in normalization well before we in fact see the growth deteriorate that kind of interest rate hike would represent. And that's why we're seeing more volatility right now. What I also think is interesting is what's going on in terms of currencies, because The dollar index was in positive territory in here today. And a good part of the reason for that is because Christine Lagarde is basically saying that the ECB is in no hurry to raise rates, and that when they do begin to raise rates, they'll only do it at the appropriate time, and that they will be very slow in committing to a succession of interest rate hikes. So she's talking the euro down. And then Japan with the yen, they're certainly not eager to support the yen, and it was in negative territory today with the dollar rallying on this chart. And this continues to look like a broad consolidation and clear scope evident for a breakout. And when we think about JGB yields, well, the Bank of Japan is certainly not being overly aggressive, and yields were well off the low in here today. So this is putting significant pressure and really questioning the credibility of the Bank of Japan's yield curve control policy. Of course, they might decide to intervene at any point, but so far this breakout is being held. And then we can think about some of the commodity related currencies, because with industrial metals doing well and gold testing the sequence of lower rally highs and oil pushing higher, one thing that we can think about is the commonality that we see in a number of commodity related currencies. There was a range that had been underway before the big decline in 20 or the end of 2019 and into 2020. And now we're back in the region of about 70 cents for the Australian dollar. Then when we think about the Canadian dollar, we can see a pretty similar pattern that we had the failed downside break in 2020, and now it's back in the region of that 1,000-day moving average, but a broad pattern overall of weakness over the course of the last decade and ranging over the course of the last 4 years. And then we can think about some of the emerging market currencies, because the Norwegian crown, Canadian dollar, New Zealand dollar, and Australian dollar all share that similar characteristic, and all the commodity currencies pulled back in 2020. But then the South African rand has the same pattern. And probably better to just look at it the other way around. So we have the failed downside break in 2020 and then pushing back up into this overhead range. So there's a great deal of commonality in emerging market currencies. And this is equally true for some of the currencies which have been weakest over the course of the last decade. The Brazilian real doesn't have that same pattern that the other currencies have. It has been deteriorating for at least the last 4 or 5 years, but there's been a base formation underway for 2 years now, and it's coming up to the upper side of that base formation. And the Mexican peso is also steadying here, and again, it does have that same type of pattern overall, where we have the big decline in 2020 and then the rebound and subsequent ranging. So we're seeing increasing evidence of base formation development in commodity and energy related currencies. Now, it might take renewed strength in oil prices, or at least sustained strength, for money to start flowing through in terms of the balance of payments and to radically change the outlook for the budget deficits and ability to fund social programs of commodity producers. But if we're back in a new commodity bull market and oil prices remain firm and industrial resources continue to do well, then it's quite likely that commodity markets, our commodity-related currencies, will also start to do well, and they'll benefit from interest rate differentials. So, Brazil, in particular, has been raising rates aggressively, but Mexico has also raised rates by 200 basis points over the course of the last 9 months. And it's quite likely that we're going to see much more aggressive action by commodity-related markets to raise rates because they will have intransigent inflation problems. They'll see a lot of hot money coming into the countries because of the booming sales of commodities, and they'll need to find a home for it. So it's quite likely that interest rates will begin to rise. And of course, the only time that the rupee has done better has been during periods of time when oil prices were strong. Now, the rupee was weaker today in a reasonably dynamic manner, and the Nifty index, the Nifty index continues to pause in the region of the 200-day moving average. So, as oil prices move higher, then that is putting pressure on India. Now, I think when we look at the macro picture, India's back in a new credit cycle. And the Modi government is attempting to buy the regional elections, particularly in Uttar Pradesh. That's going to pump money into the system, but probably put downward pressure on the rupee in the short term. And because of inflation and higher energy prices, then stimulating into that kind of environment could potentially have negative effects on the currency, which could then translate into less demand for stocks in the short term. Nevertheless, India is growing faster than most other major economies, and that's unlikely to change given the demographic dividend. So it means that any time that India pulls back in an aggressive manner, it will be a buying opportunity. And we're now right in the region of the 200-day moving average, much like we have similar conditions across most of the Wall Street indices as well. Then China is also failing to rally. And the CSI 300 is back in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. China was able to circumvent a lot of the difficulties from the pandemic because they were able to lock down various portions of the economy and ensure that workers were warehoused in inside factories. So that allowed production to persist, and then exports surged. So they thought that they'd be able to lean on the property sector because of that cushion that they were able to generate during the pandemic. But we're seeing stocks like Pfizer and Moderna coming down quickly. And Moderna was in negative territory again in here today. And it's less than half, and really now considerably less than half, the peak values from the third quarter of 2021. So this is basically the market concluding that we are past the pandemic stage and into the endemic stage. And China is eventually going to have to come to terms with the coronavirus and really keeping the country completely isolated from the outside world is not a long-term solution, and growth will falter if the outsized demand from the pandemic moderates, which does look likely. And as growth moderates internationally, then it will also weigh on growth in China. So they need to stimulate, and then, of course, if they stimulate a lot, it's going to put pressure on the currency and increase inflationary risks. So they're in a tight position. And certainly, assistance need to be pushed out into the property markets, and that is happening. And the credit cycle does appear to be turning in China. But so far, particularly the more levered portion of the market has been pulling back in much the same way that we've seen weakness coming through on Wall Street, and particularly in the SPAC sector and the IPO sectors. So the Chinex index is really quite oversold in the short term and coming back into a potential area of support around that 1,000-day moving average. But we need upward dynamics to really confirm that we're back in a bullish environment overall. The H-share index in Hong Kong continues to pause in the lower side of this very long-term range. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but there is an increasing likelihood that it will be able to do that, provided there is additional monetary and fiscal assistance provided to the market. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.